The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And, go ahead with the, this evening I thought of talking about something that, working with something that happens for all of us without exception in our sitting practice and in our attempt also to bring our mindfulness into our daily lives, and that is that our mind wanders. You know, we can actually, when we see that there's a pattern or habit that happens for us a lot, it can be useful to get curious about it and investigate it and to begin to explore why does it happen, when does it happen, what's going on around it. And we can have this kind of curiosity and exploration around the fact that the mind wanders. So what do I mean by wandering mind? I mean, that's kind of a word that we sometimes use and in meditation. You know, when the mind wanders and you notice you've been wandering, then, you know, come back to whatever your practice is. But there's different ways that that can feel, this wandering. So I thought I'd just start by naming a few of the ways it can feel. So it might feel like, basically what I'll say is that the wandering mind is when the mind loses mindfulness. It's when the mind is no longer aware of what's happening in the present moment. And so to some extent, we can look at the wandering mind as being the disappearance of mindfulness. And then when we recognize that the mind has been wandering, that's a moment of the reappearance of mindfulness. And so in terms of looking at the wandering mind as a phenomenon, we can think about, we can think about it from two sides. We might think about it in terms of the wandering, exploring kind of the edges of the wandering, or we could think about it of exploring something about mindfulness itself. What is this experience of mindfulness when it returns? What are the conditions that help it? When does it tend to get lost? So the wandering mind is basically a time or an experience of low or no mindfulness. And it feels different ways at different times. Sometimes it might feel like kind of just a drifting. We've been paying attention in our mindfulness practice and our meditation practice, and it's not like there's anything in particular that's like charging us up. It's almost more like a daydreamy state or a drifty kind of spacey almost state that's not mindful, but it's also not very charged. So that's one way it can feel. And I think the more we meditate, the more that particular flavor can show up. It also can be almost an active reflection that something comes up in our mind that kind of hooks us, something we remember, oh, I forgot to do that today, and we start thinking about it, trying to, you know, kind of hook ourselves to, I've got to remember that later. And so it's like an active reflection, an active thinking about where, again, the mindfulness is getting lost. And something I'll point to here just up front is that in all of these that I'm going to mention, all these different ways, all these different flavors of the mind getting lost or the loss of mindfulness, it's not the thing that's happening that is inherently something that we cannot be mindful of. And so even the spaciness or the driftiness or the that kind of daydreamy quality of mind, it is possible to be mindful of that. It's possible to know it's happening while it's happening. It's possible within active thinking of remembering, oh, that thing, I've got to remember to do that thing. It's possible to be mindful in active thinking. And I'll talk a little bit more about this as we go. And then another flavor of the wandering mind is we could call maybe kind of a mind storm. It's kind of a reactive storm, which may have a lot of thoughts, but also might be more emotional. You know, it might be just a kind of a memory of something comes up and a strong emotion arises with that. And maybe there's a lot of thoughts that are happening with that and maybe not, but it's got this flavor of there being a strong kind of emotional storm, almost a reactive kind of storm. So that's another flavor of the mind getting lost. And then a fourth flavor is, it's almost like as the mind begins to settle and concentrate, I talked about the kind of spacing out kind of wandering or the drifty, daydreamy kind of wandering. But there's also a loss of mindfulness sometimes as the mind begins to settle into states of more calm and more concentration. It's almost like we can get lost in the calm. So it's like not a lot of thinking, not daydreaming, but it's just like we're in this space of just calm. And then it's at some point we kind of come back and it's like, yeah, the mind's been really calm, but I have not been here. So that's another flavor. And I would say that one can happen more as the mind becomes more familiar with meditation and begins to touch into more concentrated-like states. And we can get lost in concentration. We can have a kind of a sense of just kind of slipping into it, losing the mindfulness. But it's not that we're caught in something else at all, or that the mind is even drifting around. It's just like it's in that state of that concentrated place without being mindful of it. And again, in the mind storms, the kind of the emotional reactivity storms, and in this place of maybe landing in a state of mind like calm. It's not the state of mind itself. It's not the mind storm. It's not the emotional reactivity itself that is, it's not necessary to not be mindful in those states. It's almost more of a habit, or that we haven't quite cultivated the capacity to have mindfulness kind of infiltrate those states. So that's a little bit about what the wandering mind is. And, you know, something maybe a little seemingly frustrating about the wandering mind is that we cannot stop it. We cannot consciously tell ourselves to stop it. We have to already have some re-arising of mindfulness in order to begin to let go of whatever it is that the mind has been kind of hooked to in the wandering, in order to reconnect to being here. And so, you know, there has to be a kind of spontaneous re-arising of mindfulness. And so it is a little bit of a pointer in some ways that, you know, we don't actually have total control over our minds. You know, we sit down to meditate and the mind wanders. You know, we think we might say, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay attention to the breath, or I'm going to be in the present moment noticing what's here. And a few moments later, our mindfulness is gone. You know, we didn't decide to do that usually. I mean, if we can decide at times, I don't want to pay attention to that. Maybe I'll pay attention to that instead. But the kind of the getting hooked or getting lost in thought, getting kind of pulled out of the present moment, that is not a conscious act. It is more habitual. It is conditioned. It is the habits and patterns of our mind that make that happen. And so we didn't decide to do that. We didn't decide for the mind to wander. This is actually a little bit of a window into the Buddhist teaching on not self, this Buddhist understanding of there isn't an entity or a kind of a solid, stable I or me or mine in here in charge of everything. In fact, the Buddha kind of pointed out this very sense of the kind of lack of ultimate control we have over our mind as being evidence for not self. You know, he said, well, you know, we can't say, may my mind be this way, may my mind be thus, may my mind not be thus. May my sit down, may my mind not wander. Wouldn't that be great if we could do that? But we can't. You know, so the Buddha points to that as being evidence for not self. He says we cannot say that because the mind is not self. He said if the mind were self, we would be able to say, mind do this, mind don't do that. But it's because the mind is not, because it is not self, that we don't have that capacity. And yet it's not hopeless. I mean, the whole shaping of our minds, the whole ways in which our mind kind of tends in one direction or another has to do with conditioning. And our minds have been shaped habitually by what we've been exposed to in the past. That has shaped, you know, the kinds of things we get caught in, the kinds of thoughts that come up in our mind, you know, the very things that take us out of the present moment. Those are things that have been conditioned, you know, out of our upbringing, out of what we've done today or what we're thinking about doing tomorrow. It's conditioned that our minds get lost. It's conditioned the way our minds get hooked into things. And we can begin through this practice of mindfulness to shape the mind in a different direction, to shape the mind towards, rather than the habitual ways in which we are reactive, you know, we begin to, the mind begins to understand the possibility of engaging in a different way, of engaging out of compassion, kindness, wisdom. It begins to understand that following through on this reactivity creates pain in my system, and maybe that's not the best way to go. And so the mindfulness of our experience begins to shape our minds in a completely new way. And so essentially we're using this power of conditioning, the way conditioning works, in our mindfulness practice. We are reshaping our minds in our mindfulness practice. And this kind of exploration around what I'm going to speak about tonight, looking at the edges of the wandering mind, getting familiar with it, this very exploration will create the conditions for there to be less wandering mind. It will create the conditions for there to be more capacity to recognize it sooner. It'll create the conditions to be able to kind of see the mind getting pulled out, to recognize it coming back more quickly. And so the conditions that we put into our minds in this moment shape it for the future. And so this kind of sense of the mind being out of control, it's not something to just say, well, oh, well, I'll give up then. It's more, well, let's see what we can... It's not under some entity's control, but the shaping of how we engage with our experience shapes our choices for the future, shapes how our minds kind of move in the direction, what direction they move in the future. And so we can learn a lot by looking at this pattern of the wandering mind. One thing in particular being this kind of amazing uncontrollability of the mind. You know, we sit down to meditate and the mind wanders. Even more amazing, in some ways, is that mindfulness comes back. You know, we were lost. We were not even really present to make a choice about anything. You know, when we're present and mindful, there's maybe a little bit of choice we have about the next thing that happens. But when our mind is wandering, we are fully in this kind of conditioned stream. We are almost at the mercy of the conditioning that has happened in our lives. And, you know, the more that we practice, actually, in some ways, we get to see that as the mind slips out, you know, the conditioning that also plays as the mind loses its mindfulness. It's not only the conditioning of our long ago time of, you know, how we were raised with our families and, you know, what our reactive patterns are, but sometimes the conditioning that we're engaged in the mindfulness practice, the wholesome qualities of love and wisdom and compassion, those things can also be where the mind slips out to. So the you know, the slipping out is not always something that is reactive. It is conditioned, But it's not always a problem. It's not always a difficulty or a challenge. And so in that, that the mind slipping out, you know, in the that place, we are not mindful, not aware, not in charge at all. We cannot say, oh, may my mindfulness return. It happens. It just happens. Again, not I or me doing it. The conditions of, in some ways, the conditions that we create in our sitting practice, where we remember, when we remember, we kind of reconnect with, right, mindfulness is helpful, mindfulness is useful. That is a condition. It's like planting seeds that encourages more mindfulness at some points in the future. And the moment when mindfulness re-arises after we've been lost, it's like one of those seeds is bearing fruit in that moment. Mindfulness returns. But we didn't do that. And that moment, actually, that's the first place I'd really like to focus on in this kind of exploration of the edges of the wandering mind, is that moment of mindfulness returning. Because it's a great moment. If we can, habitually, I think in that moment, often when we've begun meditating, we may have a kind of a reactive relationship with that moment. It's like, oh, I was lost again. Or it might even be more than that. It might be way more reactive than that. There can be a kind of a habit of judging ourselves when the mindfulness returns. You know, I sat down to meditate and the mind wandered and here I am back. And, you know, we're basically blaming ourselves for the uncontrollability of the mind in that moment. And so recognizing or remembering that, right, this is, the getting lost was not my choice and the returning was a gift. So the recognition of that returning of mindfulness, can we be first of all, thankful that it's come back and kind of curious about that experience right there. Because that experience of mindfulness returning, you know, that is really where we can start to get familiar with the quality of mindfulness itself. In that moment as mindfulness returns, you know, in the moments before we were lost and the mind was swamped in something or other, or just absorbed in something, not aware, not present. But in this moment, as mindfulness returns, it's almost like the light comes on. There's a quality of the awareness infusing the experience. And in that moment, because there's a little bit of a contrast with the previous moment, it's a great time to begin to get familiar with the difference between being mindful and not being mindful. We can't really be aware of not being mindful in the moment of not being mindful because we're not mindful. But we can, in the moment of mindfulness returning, it's like there's a lingering sense of what it was like for the mind to not be mindful. And so we can get the flavor of that. Oh, this is what it's like to be aware again. So awareness is back. The other great thing about that moment, not only does it help us to kind of get familiar with that experience of being mindful, kind of in and of itself, you know, mindfulness is always aware of something. When that mindfulness returns, there will be something that it's connected to. It might be a breath, it might be a sound, it might be a body sensation, it might be a thought or an emotion. It could be many things that the mindfulness is kind of connected to as the mind returns. But there is, you know, there's a way in which we can kind of get familiar with the quality of the awareness itself, separate from what we are aware of. And you don't have to work too hard at that. Often I just like to encourage people to just recognize in the broadest possible way, oh yeah, awareness is back. aware again. That's I'm aware again. And then what's here? What is this awareness knowing in that moment? So just, you know, the awareness quality of the being aware, it's actually a pretty familiar in some ways, although maybe not in something that we've actually consciously recognized, but it's almost like, you know, something that's so pervasive that we don't notice it. It's like the air we breathe. We have experienced it a lot, this experience of being aware, but we haven't consciously recognized, oh, this is what it's like to be aware. And so it's a familiar and yet not familiar, like the air we breathe. It's like we can kind of tune into that, the air we breathe, and know we are breathing air. But it's not something that's very present for us because it's so ubiquitous. And so this experience of awareness, again, it's not so clear for us to say, you know, this is actually what it is. At first, I'd say it took me, you know, several months actually to really begin to get a sense of this experience, of what it's like to be aware, independent of the thing that I was aware of. But it was just this simple, yep, okay, I'm aware. I know that I'm aware. And then I didn't try to figure out how I knew I was aware. Just like, yep, I know that I'm aware. And it's like, every time I became aware in that moment, yep, I know I'm aware. And over time, over the, you know, months of just noticing that, it's like the mind begins to kind of understand the quality that is similar in all of those experiences. So we begin to understand the sense of mindfulness itself in that experience. So there's that re-arising of mindfulness, the kind of beginning to get a sense of that quality of mindfulness. Then there's another great thing about that moment in that you did not have to do it. It was effortless mindfulness. And we get a lot of those moments of effortless mindfulness. Every time the mindfulness returns, it's a moment of effortless mindfulness. But what we usually do there is we pick it up and beat ourselves up about not having been mindful. And often, too, we might pick it up and think, oh, better be mindful. And so it's almost like we clamp down or clench on to trying to hold on to it. Instead of just recognizing, okay, yes, this is awareness. This is the experience of awareness. And this is what it's like to be aware effortlessly. So much of our practice of mindfulness is, there is a kind of a way in which we do explore cultivating mindfulness through prompting it or reminding ourselves to be aware once we are already aware. That is some level of effort to do that. But this experience of the mindfulness returning, you know, it starts to give us a sense of the possibility of what it's like to be mindful without trying so hard, without working at it. And so, you know, when I started exploring this moment of the wandering mind coming back, you know, this just being curious about this moment, you know, the mind has been wandering, it's back, it's awake again. You know, and I started just kind of recognizing, oh, here it is, and this is what it's like, and this is effortless mindfulness. It really helped me to have a much less conflicted relationship with the wandering mind, with the fact that the mind just, you know, in a 45-minute sitting, it might wander 50 times, you know. It's like every time that it wanders is an opportunity to get a taste of that effortless mindfulness. What a gift. So to kind of turn it around, that, you know, it's not so much that we're concerned about the mind wandering, but more about, oh, here is this effortless mindfulness. What's that like? So that really helped me to let go of the judgment around the wandering mind when I got curious about that effortless quality of being mindful in that moment that mindfulness returns. Another thing about that moment is just so the mindfulness returns in that moment. And often it is kind of connected with whatever it was that the mind was doing in the moments before. So when the mindfulness returns, it may be, you know, flavored by wherever the mind had been wandering. You know, it might have been wandering into that emotional terrain. It might have been wandering into that drifty, daydreamy terrain. When the mindfulness returns, often in that moment, we get a flavor of what it's like to be present with that, whatever it is. So let's say the mind had been drifty and daydreamy, and you kind of wake up. It almost can kind of almost feel like you're just kind of emerging into this daydream. And, oh, there I am in this daydreamy kind of quality. There's the mindfulness returning, and there's also the mindfulness connecting with that kind of spacey or daydreamy experience right in that moment. And that to me, this, you know, when the mindfulness returns, the mindfulness returns infusing itself into whatever had been happening, that begins to give us the education, begins to help us see that it's not the spaciness itself, it's not the emotional storm itself that took us out of mindfulness. That there is, in fact, this possibility of being mindful in that or with that. So the mind spacing out or the daydreamy quality and oh, here's the mindfulness. Oh, whew, it kind of infuses that daydreamy state. You can know it, and then potentially, because the daydreamy state might be a little sticky, choose to take some action that might help the mind to be a little more clear in that moment. Sometimes it's just enough. Sometimes it can be just enough to recognize, oh, wow, daydreaming is what's happening. Or spacey mind is what's happening. And as we, instead of resisting or fighting or pushing or pulling against it, we just become aware of it. Sometimes that is enough to diffuse it. Sometimes that creates the conditions for that spaciness. It's like it just goes away, like the sun has come out in the fog and the fog dissipates. So sometimes that can happen as we just become aware. Oh, waking up into spacey mind. Oh, that's what the mind knows right now. But at the same time, it might not be that simple. Sometimes sometimes it can be helpful to actually consciously put our attention back on something in that moment. Like, oh, maybe I can connect with the breath again. Also in the we might also begin to see how the mind has been wandering in some kind of a thought storm. So the mind goes off into thought, and whatever it is that we wake up into, that a really helpful tool in the moment of waking up is to kind of say, okay, the mind has been wandering. What has been the effect of what the mind has been doing on me now? So, the spaciness might have a quality of just drifty or daydreamy quality. But if the mind has been off in a kind of an emotional kind of storm, it's like, oh, the mind has been charged about something, and oh, frustration is what's happening. And so it's kind of waking up into, so it's not like saying, oh, the mind has been thinking, let that go, come back to the breath, or just kind of trying to cut off the thoughts. It's more like honoring, this is what the mind has been doing. This is what the mind has woken up into. Let's take a moment to let the mindfulness connect with that. Oh, frustration is what's happening. You may be able to feel that in the body. We may be able to notice a kind of tension or tightness in the mind. And so that quality of, oh, the mind, this is what the mind has woken up into. So that question of what is it like now, having been lost in thought? Whatever has been happening that can be useful. So whether it's gone off into a kind of a mind storm of some kind, or it's gone off into that drifty quality, or it's kind of moved into, I mentioned in the guided meditation, sometimes when the mindfulness comes back, we can check in and see, maybe there's calm there. Sometimes the mind actually wanders into calm. And so if we are in that moment, if we have the relationship, oh, it's a problem that the mind has been wandering, you know, that reaction to the wandering mind is going to agitate the mind, and we're going to miss that there had been some calm there. And so, you know, that just like, oh, what is it like for the mind to have been wandering? Actually, wow, it's pretty calm. That's what it's like for the mind to have been lost, right? In this moment. And then we can connect with that experience. Oh, calm is happening right now. We might notice the pleasantness of that experience. We might notice a settledness in the body. It could be really quite lovely to meet that moment. And the more that I practice, actually, the more that I see, you know, at least half of the time when my mind wanders, it's doing that kind of thing. And, you know, if I were judging the wandering mind all the time, you know, it's like I would miss out on that. It's almost like the mind says, yeah, I know how to settle, you know, let me do it for you. And then we can kind of connect with that as the mindfulness returns. The other side of the equation of the wandering mind is, so, you know, the easiest place to begin to notice this, to play with the edges of the wandering mind, to kind of notice the qualities, is when the mindfulness wakes up. It is harder to see the mindfulness to start to slip out. It is possible, but it's harder because the mind is basically getting interested in something else, and it is got, the habit is kind of taking the momentum over the mindfulness, the habit of whatever it is that is caught our interest, you know, some thought or some sound, you know, it's like the habit of mind that says, oh yeah, let's pay attention to that, has kind of overtaken the mindfulness. And so it's harder to see this. But there's a few things that I want to point to as some things that we can begin to explore around this area. One is that we might begin to, on the return from the wandering, begin to notice some particular themes of where the mind goes when it wanders. Some particular habits or patterns there, so that we might begin to recognize that we tend to get caught when this particular person pops into my mind, or when this particular emotion or mind state happens, boredom or depression or anger, whatever, you know, we all have kind of our favorite habitual mind states that tend to hook our minds. And so in the moment when mindfulness returns, we might begin to, again, over time, notice some themes. Jack Kornfield sometimes suggests that you know, just kind of, when you return from being lost in thought, sometimes just acknowledging with the word or something what the mind has been doing, planning, remembering, strategizing, arguing, you know, whatever kind of flavor it is, just with a word, you can recognize it. And you might begin to, judging, that's another big one. You might begin to recognize that a couple of themes, you know, we might have a top three kind of theme that our mind wanders to. And so recognizing that, then we can begin to, in the return again, so maybe the judging mind is a pattern. And when we recognize, oh, judging mind, that's what's been happening. So in that moment of the mindfulness returning, we begin to get a little bit familiar with that flavor of the judging mind, just as the mindfulness returns. And so as we begin to get familiar with that flavor as the mindfulness returns, again, we see, oh yeah, this is the experience of being aware or mindful of that quality of the mind that's saying, that's better than that. I got to do that better. Or, so it's got, you know, we get a sense of that flavor of the judging mind. Then as we begin to get a sense of that flavor, then we may begin to be able to recognize it coming up in the mind before the mind wanders. You know, that we begin to see, oh, you know, so we might start to see our mind go, sitting here in meditation, hearing somebody move. Oh, I'm doing better than them. Oh, a little bit of the quality of judging comes up. And then you can, because you know that tends to be something that you habitually get lost in, you may be, it may, the mind may be able to add a little bit of interest. There's like, oh, judging's happening. Let's see what that's like to be mindful of it now, as opposed to, you know, just kind of following it. And so not necessarily to cut it off in that moment, but again, it's like, oh, the mind is starting to judge. What's that like? And it may simply be that the conscious recognition of it is sufficient to keep us present. Or it may be that after a few moments of connecting with that, oh yeah, the mind's kind of judging, we start to feel it get stickier. We start to feel a kind of an urge to jump on that judging thought and judge more to, you know, make ourselves feel better or something. And so we might see that kind of urge to go in that direction. And then we might be able to say, oh yeah, let's not do that. Maybe we can set that aside. But giving yourself a little bit of time to explore the possibility of that, of that edge of where we tend to get hooked, that edge of we tend to get hooked in certain patterns. And so, you know, maybe we can start to recognize those patterns. So this is one way we can start to see, you know, when we get familiar with the things we tend to get hooked to, when we see them coming up, it almost becomes like a little like wake up bell, like, oh, careful, judging is coming, or careful, frustration is arising. So let's see what's happening here. And again, I don't want to have this to be a kind of a harshness in the mind to say, oh, judging is happening, better stop that and come back to that, because that's applying a kind of an aversive filter in the mind. It's kind of applying an aversion to that quality. And our mindfulness practice is really an encouragement towards a more friendly kind of allowing attention that can hold things, that can be curious about things. And so can we be curious about these patterns as opposed to just trying to cut them off? You know, these habits and patterns have been with us for probably most of our lives, and they have served us in some ways. And so what, you know, what's going on with it? What's happening? So that's one thing that we can start to kind of maybe get familiar with, the places that our mind gets hooked, and add a little bit of interest when we notice those flavors coming up in the mind in our meditation. Then another kind of key experience or thing that happens in our mind that we can start to get attuned to, I would say, is beginning to get familiar with when the attention shifts from one experience to another. So what I mean by that is, you know, you might be paying attention to the breath, for instance. You might be noticing the breath. And then a sound of a car or the train happens. And the attention can sometimes shift to that experience of the sound kind of behind our back. You know, we may still kind of sort of be with the breath, but the attention's kind of split and it moves to the sound. But then our attention kind of gets hooked to the sound. So there's a shift of the attention. It shifts from the breath to the sound. And so we can start to get curious about when the attention shifts. And, you know, I think sometimes this kind of thing happens when we are kind of almost in a rote way trying to stay with one thing, like the breath. It's like, yep, I'm with the breath. It's like sound, no, I'm with the breath. But then, you know, our attention just gets pulled out almost behind the scenes because we think we're staying with the breath. And so it's like our attention has other ideas and it goes off to that sound. And so this is one of the main reasons why our minds wander, is that the attention has shifted and we haven't consciously noticed it shifting. So the getting familiar with this experience of the shifting of attention is, it's a little bit of a challenge, but we can play with it a little bit. one place we can play with it, one of my favorite places to play with it, is in daily life, in doing walking. So I do a walking practice where I let my attention, you know, not just be in my feet, but let my attention take in seeing and hearing and body moving through space and feet touching the ground. So I let my attention kind of rotate between different areas while I'm doing walking meditation. And when maybe, you know, 10 steps of seeing and 10 steps of hearing, 10 steps of movement, and 10 steps of contact, the feet on the ground. And when I'm in the seeing terrain, noticing the seeing, this is a place where there can be some interest in how the attention shifts from experience to experience. So sometimes we are noticing just kind of the panorama of seeing, just that seeing is happening in a very broad way, and that at some point something will happen. There'll be a movement maybe or a splotch of color, and then the attention will get drawn to that. And if we're incurious about the whole experience of seeing and not like trying to somehow artificially stay in this kind of panoramic mode of seeing, but just like curious about, oh, seeing has shifted to looking. Seeing to looking, that's what's happened. And then maybe another looking and another looking and then back to seeing. So we can start to kind of be curious about this shift of attention and what happens around it, or why does it happen? Movement is one of the big reasons why in the field of seeing that the attention shifts. A particular color or a new shape appears in our field. That's another reason why the attention shifts. And so we don't have to think that that's an issue or a problem, but just a recognition, oh, looking is happening. Okay, and I can know that. And then maybe back to seeing, then looking again. And so this kind of noticing this difference between seeing and looking. And likewise in the field of hearing, we can notice the difference between kind of a general taking in of hearing, the ambient sound of hearing, and actually listening to something. You know, it might be that in the hearing it's just like, you know, there's nothing particularly drawing the attention, but you're knowing the hearing, you know, maybe distant sounds, and you don't have to like know everything that we are hearing. It's just like, you know, just taking in the ambient sounds. And then something, maybe a sound kind of comes strong, like the caw of a crow, and suddenly there's clear listening. And so again, noticing that shift, hearing to listening. This is an attentional shift. And the familiarity playing with this in our daily life can help us in our sitting begin to get familiar with this kind of shift from attending to the breathing to suddenly like, oh, the attention kind of picks up on the sound. We can start to get familiar with that quality of the attention shifting and be with that and not have to try to have the idea of like, oh no, I shouldn't go there because I'm paying attention to the breath. It's like, oh, I'm mindful of the attention shifting. Let's be mindful of that. Let's be mindful of the listening right now, of taking in that sound. And then the sound will fade. And then we can just be with whatever's next, with the next breath or another experience. And so this attention shifting, again, is a key place where when we don't notice that happening, that's a big place where our attention will kind of wander out of the present moment. Let's see, I've got one more that I want to bring in, but I did want to take some time for questions. I'll see if I can bring this one in briefly. So there's also something that happens that our mind, kind of gets lost in, sometimes gets lost in, you know, what I would say, states of mind in which we habitually think we can't be mindful. So maybe sleepiness, spaciness, dullness, something like that. And so, you know, that kind of You know, the mind, sometimes in the mindfulness, it will kind of just shift into one of those states. And, or it might just be that the mind is a little spacey or sleepy. And then we have the idea or the belief that we can't be mindful while that's happening. I mean, how many of you have had the thought, I cannot be mindful because I'm too sleepy? Me too. What I'd like to propose is, if you know you're having that thought, you have enough mindfulness to be aware that you are sleepy, because you already know that you're sleepy. And so there is the mindfulness that's there already that can know that. Usually what's going on there is that we're fighting that state. We want something else to be happening, or we want to be trying to pay attention to something else. We want to be paying attention to the breath or paying attention to the body sensations. But what's going on is the mind is actually interested in being in that sleepy state. And sometimes the very easiest thing to do there is to be aware of that. But if we have the idea that we can't be aware of it, the fighting with it, like, oh, I can't be mindful of this. We're trying to be mindful of, you know, we're trying to be mindful of the breath, and the attention is trying to be pulled to the sleepiness because that's what it really wants to pay attention to. And we just get lost in the sleepiness because we think we can't be mindful of it. It's like the mind just basically checks out and says, well, I can't be mindful of that, so I can't even try. And so this is a place of kind of trusting or being willing to play the edges of letting the mindfulness get lost. Because I played this edge a lot with the sleepiness. And, you know, at one point I began to really just say, okay, well, sleepiness is happening a lot in this sitting, so I'm just going to let it happen and see how far I can be with it. You know, so I would play with it. I'd watch it. I would see. I'd kind of feel a lot of sensations of kind of heaviness in the body and kind of this like oscillation quality in the brain. And then I would fall over. It's like, okay, I'm awake again. Let's just try again. And it's like that sitting. I fell asleep a whole bunch of times. But because I was in a place where when I fell, I would wake up, it's like I just did it over and over again. And, you know, actually in that 45-minute period of sitting, there were probably only about a minute total that I wasn't mindful. Each time the mind dropped, there were a few seconds of losing that mindfulness. But, you know, overall in that sitting, there was a lot of awareness of the experience of sleepiness. And so this is a piece that I like to point to, the possibility of being mindful in states that we think we can't be mindful in. And if it feels like the attention is kind of pulled to something where we're telling ourselves, well, I can't be mindful while that's happening, see if you can suspend judgment on that thought and play with the possibility. Let it be okay for the mind to get lost in it, but play with the exploration of maybe it is possible to be mindful of spaciness, or maybe it is possible to be mindful of sleepiness. And what I've seen happen with that is it's like each bit that I try, maybe it is possible. It's like the mindfulness gets a little further into that state, gets a little more capacity to be with that state instead of just giving up with it. But again, this is a little bit of something of the trust of it's okay to be mindful of things that we think are like somehow a problem. You know, it's like somehow we think that being mindful of the breath is being better than being mindful of sleepiness. But it's just another experience. And mindfulness actually doesn't care what it's aware of. What we're cultivating, the quality of that mindfulness, is independent of what we are mindful of. So there's a few minutes for comments or questions or reflections if there's anything that somebody would like to say. And we'll use the mics. Maureen will hand the mic out if there's... Yeah. Somebody else has one. And wait for the mic, yeah.
I don't know what I did, but my left hand is very painful. And I hurt it somehow, and it was a complete distraction for the last hour. I don't know what my question is, but could you just comment on that and how that might affect you?
So, this is a kind of a place where, you know, did you feel like it was distracting, taking your attention away?
I alternated between thinking I was being very mindful of the pain and feeling it was a distraction. So I kept, I think I was fighting with myself.
Yeah.
To say, see if I can ignore it, or no, embrace it and go with it.
Yeah, and I think the ignoring often has the kind of an aversive quality to it. The embracing it, you know, can be very helpful at times, but that there's sometimes it can be useful to learn a skill like, so that the hand feels painful, and it's like, yep, that's happening, and I'm not going to try to ignore it, but I'm also not going to focus on it. So that it's like, okay, there's a lot of other things going on in the present moment besides that pain. Now, it may be that you want to find it in a place where you can kind of, you know, get it to a place where it isn't being more damaged. I mean, I can imagine that it could be that there'd be some posture of the hand, or if you've got pain in the body, there can be times that some way that we are sitting with it can be exacerbating it. And you don't want to do that. So you want to find a place, a way to hold it or keep it so that it's not getting worse. But then sometimes we can, you know, just you know, notice it. It's like, yep, that's happening, and there's hearing happening, and there's seeing happening, to kind of make a broader container, because sometimes the mind getting drawn to it can also be aversive. You know, it's almost like the mind is like, this is really painful. I hate this. How can I fix this? How can I get rid of it? So, you know, it's helpful to notice whether the mind can be somewhat at ease or balanced with that experience. And, you know, so the push-pull around these things, we kind of want to move into the middle, which is neither repressing nor kind of diving into and kind of feeding the reactivity around it. So that's another thing to check, is when you were paying attention to it, was it okay to pay attention to it, or was the mind getting, like, really nervous and uptight and confused and concerned about it? If it was, then something more in the middle can be really helpful. If you were able to just say, oh yeah, that's that painful hand. That's the experience of the burning and the stabbing and the aching. Then that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Anyone else? Yeah.
Thank you. I actually really liked the way you had played. You talked about the whole mindfulness, and it actually kind of gives me excuse to have my to be persistent and about my actual on the cushion practice. Because most of the times I always think that I want this perfect sitting, or I'm too tired, or I'm too busy, or I'm too whatever. And then it's actually the best time to just sit and just be aware and just, you know, lend itself to just myself, to just this open awareness. And sometimes the wisdom just does come. So, or not.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So I really, yes. It was a great way for me to not have an excuse to sit. Not sit. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, if I'm, you know, not going to sit, can I just be aware? You know, it's such a simple thing sometimes. And a lot of our struggle in sitting has to do with fighting something that's the most natural. And so that's a question. It's like, if it feels like a struggle, like what is the easiest thing to know right now? It's like, oh, tired is the easiest thing to know right now. Or confusion, or, you know, frustration with the day is the whatever. Whatever's the easiest thing, then that can be just like, well, that's what our practice is. Not to have some idea about what the sitting should look like. Yeah, and it's been so much of an ease for me to shift to this way, you know, to not have any idea about what the sitting should look like, but just like, well, just take what comes. It's like, accept what's offered. Yeah. Thank you. It's time to stop, so thank you for your attention.